Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I don't like it, 4-year-old Colin stood in the kitchen doorway, arms crossed over his middle. We're all having lunch, sport. His dad looked up from unloading the dishwasher. Why don't you sit down at your place and we'll see what we can do for you? I don't like it, repeated Colin stoically, not moving an inch. I don't like peas. I don't like them. How about some mac and cheese? His mom offered. We're having that, too. No, Colin puffed out his lower lip in a serious pout. No. What a shame, his mom seemed to be talking to herself. This special blue bowl with Colin on it is so nice. It's a shame it can't be used today. Wait, Colin left his perch in the doorway and scrambled to get into his own chair. We can use my special bowl. Maybe we can put carrots in with the mac and cheese. I like orange. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about the effects of color in our children's environment? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an artist from the Washington, D.C. area. Mary Ann Riley has participated in over 130 group shows and 25 solo exhibitions in such places as Paris, France, Tokyo, Osaka, and Kobe, Japan, Kiev, Ukraine, Galway, Ireland, New York, and Washington, D.C. Her work is found in numerous international collections as well, both corporate and personal. She's active on numerous boards and charities. Mary Ann also has a 26-year-old son. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mary Ann.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Why is color an important ingredient in a child's environment?
Well, I think that color in general is part of our entire existence. You know, if you just think of the Earth from photos taken in nature or outer space looking back at the Earth, we are a planet of color. So I think for children, our world is a very colorful place.
We all know what colors we like, but is there an accepted theory about what responses different colors evoke from us?
Yes, there is accepted theory. And I thought I'd just give you a basic idea of what we're talking about when we talk about color theory. As the first recorded people to talk about color theory came about around in the 15th century in the notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci, which most of us know, and a man named Leon Battista Alberti, and he was from Italy.
Was he an artist also?
He also was a scientist, artist, teacher, and scientist. Isaac Newton in the 18th century was the first person to actually coin a phrase of optics theory. And this was the first person, Isaac Newton, to recognize what we now call as primary colors. And primary colors just consist of three colors to start, which is red, yellow, and blue. Then white and black and a darker green actually are the only colors that are now thought to be the basic colors that have an infinite number of mixing possibilities. In other words, from a color wheel of just these colors, which you see in most classrooms or any art-related institution, the color wheel is presented in classrooms worldwide as a source of being able to look at the colors on the wheel and cross-hatching them and mixing them, determine different colors. And that can be an infinite number. They're talking about millions now. So that's the basic thought of color theory. And the cool colors and the warm colors are determined by, let's say, warm colors are generally thought of as daylight, sunlight, sunrise, reds, yellows, things that arouse one's senses or stimulate one's imagination. Cool colors are generally spoken of as relaxing and calm colors. That would be your blues and greens, your nighttime colors, gray skies, sort of your more complementary thoughts, your calming colors. So I would say one's response to color depends on one's personality or mood that day, or specific to children. They change their favorite colors depending on their mood, if you've ever watched that. And I think one of the greatest things about children is that they don't have any rules. They paint what is their instinct. And so that sometimes is funny for an adult teacher to see them be so free without any rules.
That like the leaves on a flower don't have to be green.
Right. They can be, you know, almost any color, and that's what's fun. There isn't really any set rules for somebody to produce a work of art or see a work of art.
How does this theory work with children? How's it used with children?
I've taught preschoolers all the way up to college freshmen. So I think when you talk about how does color theory work, you have to think of what age, you know, what gender, because art is an international thing and color affects each person in a different manner. So to give you an example, young children are generally prone to like bright colors. Thus, their attraction to quick movement and simple language like animals, circus, cartoons, playgrounds tend to have the brighter colors because of the activity. If you watch a child with their toys, they're slamming them down. They're trying to get action out of them or something like that. So their natural inclination is to be drawn that way, it seems. Now, young adults are bored by the average colors or comparisons. They pursue more experimental colors and methods. In other words, drawing, film, painting, acting, writing, sculpting, digital media, dance. Their world, they want to be different. So let's say if they're in their room, they have more of a opinion, which is sometimes hard for the parent, to what they want to put up in their room or what clothes they want to wear and what colors they choose to wear. And it's not always the light colors of the child, you know, that are happy. Sometimes it's a, you know, goth look or dark coloring. And that becomes sometimes frustrating for the parent to see that change from a child who was perhaps more playful to a child that's now trying to separate a little bit from parents to their friends.
My niece wanted to paint her bedroom black in her early teens, and her parents finally let her do that, and it was, turned out to be a background for lots of other colors she liked.
I see. I think that's great.
It was
because
interesting.
Even with myself, I was one of five children, and I was the only artist, and my parents were wonderful in that they allowed me to paint things on the walls. And I didn't really think too much about it. I just did it. And then it became sort of a fun thing for people coming in the house to come look at because it progressively got, you know, wilder as time went on. But, you know, I think that these expressions are important for people who have that inclination to, specifically for children, maybe not young children, because they would ruin the house, as we all know. But I think sometimes for an adolescent that wants to do something, as long as it's within reason in the household, I think there can be a place for that, or a studio maybe, or a very small room.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on color theory. The popular book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Mary Ann Riley about the importance of color choices in our children's world. We had a child who was very artistic, and he, about the age of 10 or 11, he got very interested in science and asteroids and space and that kind of stuff. And so we let him
paint his, I think it was maybe one wall in his room or two walls, a dark blue, and then he took white paint or silver paint or something and painted comets and all kinds of things. And he was,
I think that's great,
quite happy about that.
And I do think that's a good example of boys need their things. Sometimes it's dinosaurs or sports.
How can we help children to see and appreciate the variety and subtlety of the colors in their environment? We've talked a little bit about how young children really see the bright, sort of hit you in the face kind of colors, and the older ones want to do something a little edgy. But in that in between, that period, how can we get them to appreciate the differences and the subtleties?
Most children just want their parents to spend some time with them. It's usually that we're all busy in this existence, specifically parents working. But maybe just taking a Sunday hour or two out, outside of their sports and outside of other things in school, to maybe go to a museum or a zoo. Even if somebody doesn't want to go, try to find a museum or zoo that they find interesting. Aquariums are great for children's imagination, seeing color. They will see things there that really are often forgotten by us in our fast world. It's the time that you're spending with your child trying to educate them on the subtleties. It does take time to say, do you see that shadow on that animal? Do you see the shadow in that painting? Do you see on the lines of that baseball field? What colors are those? I mean, you have to try to get to what the child might find interesting and not force them into it. To me, if you force a child into looking for something that they have to have a direct answer to, they generally don't want to do it.
What's interesting to me is when you see stuff in nature, even forgetting going to a museum, if you see some of the birds that we wouldn't even pay attention to see the colors that come together, and I'm not talking about peacocks and the obvious kind of thing, but some of these birds, I don't even know the name of them, but have browns and grays of different hues together. And it's interesting. It's not anything we would normally take a look at, but if the kids are with us and we can see stuff, the beach or when the fall comes and the leaves are changing,
right,
or in the winter, my mother, who was an artist, used to say you could see the bones of the trees. So you could see the ones that have, there are kinds of trees where the bark is supposed to peel off.
Yes.
I'm not even talking about the birches, but the other kinds and the
right,
trees that are white by themselves and the trees that are really rough. All those colors are ones that we wouldn't necessarily see.
Well, that's absolutely true. I think we start with the basic color understanding, and then one of the things that unfolds in life, just as you're saying, is the subtleties, the tints and the shades of life. And so it has a lot to do with saying, look a little further. Do you see this? Because a reassurance is a teaching method. Just as you're saying, look at that butterfly, look at that little crazy bee. What colors do you see in there? You're challenging the child in a way that they might not have thought of in a positive way. So I say to try to keep it fun.
When we're planning a child's immediate environment, and I'm speaking of young children, a bedroom, play space, even helping with the wardrobe, how is color relevant?
I think that color for each family member is going to be different. Each child's personality and age are important, and also starting with the boundaries. For a very young child, as we spoke, mostly the parent is involved in what color they believe they should have. Again, when we talk about the pre-adolescent or adolescent child, teenagers, color becomes a lot more important. I think that colors in general have the ability to affect the child's life, because if a child is upset by, say, a color they don't like in their room, everybody knows it's like going into an office that you can't stand the environment in. It does affect you. So I think it doesn't have to be a costly thing. A change in a coat of paint every couple years is a very simple way of changing an environment and making it fresh.
Or painting one wall.
That's right. something like that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on color theory. Parents' perspective needs you, your feedback, your opinions, and not least, your donations that help with the cost of producing this award-winning program.
Visit us online at www.parentsperspective.org and click on to Give Direct, I Give, or eBay at Mission Fish. Please help us continue to help you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Mary Ann Riley about the importance of color in our children's environments.
If we have a very active child, for example, who has trouble sort of settling down, would it be helpful to suggest to that child certain kinds of calming colors that we know that are calming for his room or accessories or things to have around?
When a child is very rambunctious and hard to control, I think the parent has to do everything they can to try to have a calming environment. However, sometimes it's not possible. But I do think, again, if you're trying to get a calm environment, then you have to consider and also have the child consider with you, what would you like in your room? Because I think a lot of people don't ask. I know I didn't necessarily ask until my son was a little older. But when I did, just what you said, he liked the constellations on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And that became something fun to get him to sleep because he could start to learn the stars with his father. Because I didn't know all the constellations, and my husband did, I said, oh, there's a job for you. And to this day, it's something that they'll look up at the star and he'll say, hey, look at that. As far as color goes, we know that the soothing colors are the lighter colors. That's where the whites and the light colors, the light blues, the light yellows, the warmer
pastel,
you know, impressionist type colors are generally speaking happy colors or what they can consider joyful colors. So,
how ironic is that? Because we think, gee, that's what we put in babies' rooms. Of course, babies don't see those colors. Babies need the black and
white
contrast and all that kind of stuff. Is it possible, do you think, to affect our children's behavior through the use of color? I'm thinking about, you know, a peach-colored blanket or a toy for a fussy toddler or the bright blue bowl with a preschooler's name like we had in the opening story, that kind of thing.
I think it can affect them. However, it's not necessarily true because a lot of children specifically see things differently than we may. So what might be soothing to one person, light colors or bright colors, may be very disturbing to a young male. It's very interesting. What they see as soothing could be what we see as garish.
So that means that might need to be a change.
The change would be that you could try with them to talk about things that they like surrounding them. The color, generally speaking, has to do with their interpretation of what happiness is. I was recently teaching a young 7-year-old boy, and this young boy would like to paint. And one of the things I do in my studio for younger children is I just get a simple sheet of paper, just an 8x10 inch piece of paper with just the basic colors we just talked about, the primary colors, no more than those colors of acrylics on a plate with only 3 little brushes, a tiny brush, a medium brush, and a larger brush, and some water. That way, the simplicity of that little plate and that when they want more and more and more, you can't give them. They will take it all and mess it up. What you're teaching them is a method. They can choose these colors and they can add, and then on the side of their paper, I'm showing them how to mix the colors White into any color will make it lighter. Black into any color will make it darker. Once they start seeing this little thing, I let them go through a couple of little books to choose what they would like to paint, not what I want to teach them. That way I get an indication of what appeals to them, and they have a motivation to finish that work because they're happy. It's their choice. And I found this to be true for adults that I teach and also for children, that even if you paint the same image, let's say all of us in this room, we will see it differently and we will paint it differently. And all I do as a teacher is stay to the side and say, when they're close to finishing, what do you like about it? And or are you frustrated with these colors? Or what bothers you and what doesn't? Most people are bothered by their artwork. They want something fixed. And I'll say, I'll show you how to do it realistically over here, or abstract in a way, or impressionistic. This is how you do it. And then they choose what they want to put in their mind on their artwork. That way, I am not compromising the intent of the child or anything, and it is theirs. And this little boy happened to paint a very wild-looking spider, and it came out beautiful. So what I saw at first was a very dark spider in the book. But instead of saying, oh no, maybe you don't want to do that, I let him develop and he made it a very colorful, beautiful spider. So I guess my answer to how can color help or affect the child, I would say that allowing the child to discover portions of their brain and their creativity by themselves with a little guidance on the side by the older adult, the parent.
I like that you're saying just a few colors to work with and use as they please. I think it's really confusing when kids get a big box of crayons. 64 colors is way too many to start with.
Absolutely. And even adults. I find in teaching adults, I always start everyone with simple colors, acrylic or oils. When they get more experience, color mixing, generally speaking, for a professional artist, takes 3 to 5 years to actually know the exact color you're looking for. That's how many colors there are. Ultramarines, Viridian greens, phthalo green, you know, Hunter's green. The professional starts to know what pigment they're looking for. But if you threw that out on a table, even for a college-age student, which I taught, it's very confusing. That's right.
Marianne, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who clearly want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing here?
You can actually look on the internet. Every school has after-school art classes. They're Saturday morning classes at art institutions. The other thing I would say for the college-age students, there are art bulletins for jobs.
I have a quick question that has to do with the resources for parents who have young children who are just sort of becoming aware of color and how color works and everything. Isn't it possible that our sewing scrap bags or our magazines we're about ready to throw away or aluminum foil, other things like that would lend themselves to things like collage material, things that we would just have around the house that might be just good resources for a child to play with color and texture and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. It's not the size of your studio. It's the imagination within the studio. So if you can gear your household to a creative outlet for children, it's not a costly thing, just like you said. It's simple things in your house. Clothes you're going to throw away, you could sew up and make a funny quilt, or dressing up dolls. Some people love fashion. I've seen that with young children who simply want to change it. You know, don't want the outfits they buy. They want to, you know, cut it up and make something for the dolls. I think you can be as creative as you will without a lot of money to do it. I have a website. It's M.A. Reilly, that's R-E-I-L-L-Y, art, A-R-T, .com. M.A. Reilly Art.com.
Well, this has certainly been a wonderful resource for us and for all our listeners. So, Marianne Reilly, thank you so very much for being with us and helping us to learn more about color in our children's environment.
Well, thank you for having me. I really had a nice time.
For the first person who gets in touch with us, we have a gift of an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just email us at parents.per@gmail.com. Also, put your name and mailing address and mention show number 491. And tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Ruth Cass, also an artist. Parents' Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, and the show is made possible by your financial support. Thank you for your contributions. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you can mail checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Our sound engineer is Kent Hitchcock. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.